On Sunday, November 11th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents trumpeter, flugelhorn player, former figure skater, and MD, Dr. Eddie Henderson. Join us as we discuss these topics and Dr. Eddie's participation in the supergroups M1Dishi and The Cookers, along with his recordings as a leader. That's Sunday, November 11th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is trumpeter, flugelhorn player, former figure skater, and MD, Eddie Henderson. However, we're going to start off the program paying homage to someone who transitioned recently. There's going to be a tribute at St. Peter's Church tomorrow, hosted by WBAI programmer Felipe Luciano. As a matter of fact, I heard his program yesterday, and it reminded me that I like this song. And his program was programmed by his son, Felipe Jr. So we're going to hear Midnight Train from Jerry Gonzalez and the Fort Apache Band. We'll find out more about the tribute during our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer, Hank Williams. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl, starting now.
I ain't fooling, I want some sugar in my bowl.
my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with...
I'm Eddie Henderson, trumpet player.
Dr. Eddie Henderson, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl. And I feel I must use the title doctor, because you've earned it. And so, there.
Yeah,
so
thank you.
I'll be referring to you as Dr. Eddie.
Okay. That's what most people do anyway.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining the program. I really appreciate
My
it.
My pleasure.
I've heard you tell this story before, but you've not told it to me. Oh. But I want to start with your mother and father in Tutainers.
Yes, my mother was in the original Cotton Club and on many of the Fats Waller videotapes that's shown all around the world. The most notable one was Ain't Misbehavin', where a beautiful lady sitting on the piano singing Ain't Misbehavin' to Fats Waller. Well, that's my mother.
Talk with all by myself. No one to walk with, but I'm happy on the shelf. Hey, Mr. Haven, saving all my love for you.
You fine rascal, you.
I know for certain the one I love. I'm through with flooding, it's you that I'm thinking of. Hey, Mr. Haven, saving all my love for you. For you,
just you.
Like that honor in a corner. Don't go nowhere.
What do I care? Your kisses, my dear, are worthwhile waiting for. Believe me, dear.
Don't stay out late, ain't got no place to go. I'm home about eight, just me and my radio. Hey, misbehaving, saving all my love for you.
Milk. Look what's going on here. Come out of there, you rascal, you.
That's easy, isn't it, Johnson? Take me, darling, take me to him.
No one to talk with all by myself. No one to walk with, but I'm happy on the shelf. And it's the haven, saving all my love for you.
You better save your complexion for me.
I'm through with flirting, it's you that I'm thinking of.
Hey.
In Misbehavin', I'm saving my love for you.
Oh, pat me on my back and call me Johnny.
Like Jackie Horner in the corner, don't go nowhere.
Really?
What do I care? Your kisses are worth waiting for.
Oh, that's so nice of you, baby.
I don't stay out late and I don't care to go.
Sure,
I'm
baby.
Home about 8, me and my radio.
Well, I'll drop around this
in
evening.
In Misbehavin', saving all my love for you.
Well, come here so I can tell you something, baby.
Like that honor in a corner, don't go nowhere.
I don't care.
Your kisses are always waiting for. Believe me. Ah, but I don't stay out late. I don't care.
That's fine.
I'm home about 8, me and that radio.
Well, all right.
She's also swatting away other women, is she not?
Well, the one she's swatting away is her identical twin sister.
Right.
Who was also a dancer in the Cotton Club. And ironically, until I was about 4 years old, I didn't know which one was mommy or auntie. They were so identical. They were called the Brown Twins.
Exactly.
Vivian and Hilda Brown, yes.
Now,
yes.
See, they used the wrong name on the video. That's what it is.
No, that's Vivian Brown. My father was in a singing group called Billy Williams and the Charioteers. He was the second tenor. And they were the number one, quote-unquote, Negro singing group of the 40s. Over and above the Mills Brothers and Inkfuts at that time. And they were also, notably, they were on the Bing Crosby show out in L.A. 5 days a week, singing with Bing Crosby for about 2 or 3 years. And their group, ironically, the Charioteers, had Frank Sinatra sing with them, too, way back in the early 40s.
Who's got got eyes that sparkle like a lily sprinkled with dew. Lily Bell. Who's got lips as fresh as autumn rain when summer is through? Lily Bell. Would you like a sunbeam on a rainy day? You can catch a sunbeam when she smiles your way. And who's got all the leaves aflutter so they're ready to fall? Lily Bell. Birdies take one look at her and stop their singing to call. My, you're swell. Oh, and incidentally, there's one more thing to tell. If your eyes are open and you think you're seeing a dream, it's Lily Bell. Who's got eyes that sparkle at you? Lily Bell. Who's got lips fresh as autumn dew? Would you like a sunbeam?
Sunbeam.
On a rainy day.
On a rainy day.
You can catch a sunbeam
when she smiles your way. Who's got all the leaves so they're ready to fall?
Take one look at her and stop their singing the call.
My, you're swell.
Oh, and incidentally, there's one more thing to tell.
To tell.
If your eyes are open and you think you're seeing a dream, it's clear. Same old chick. She keeps popping up all the time.
Wow. And what was your father's name?
Eddie Jackson, which is my real name. And then he passed when I was 9 years old, and my mother remarried this Dr. Henderson who lived in San Francisco. That's when I moved to San Francisco when I was 14 years old.
Yeah, because you're really a New Yorker. You were
a New Yorker. I like the way you said that. A New Yorker.
That's right.
Hey, Joey, let's go to the store.
Right.
Yeah, that's a New Yorker.
I'm a New Yorker. Too.
Oh, I can tell. I heard the twang.
By the way, happy belated birth Earth Day. Your birthday was the 26th?
October 26th.
Yeah, and mine was the 28th.
Oh, happy birthday to you, too.
Thank you so much.
Small world.
Did you celebrate?
Well, actually, I was in St. Louis playing a concert at the University of St. Louis. A friend of mine arranged the concert. So I was doing a duo, like a question and answer session, like a master class for one of the classes there. Then I played the concert that evening. Just went down there for one night. That happened to be on my birthday, though.
Excellent. I understand your mother is also responsible for not so much your playing trumpet, but sort of exposing you to people.
Oh, yes, yes.
To trumpeters.
Yeah, well, actually, in the fifth grade, they had a musical aptitude test when I was going in elementary school here in the Bronx. And so I passed, and my best friend, Larry Katz, he passed, too. So we had a choice of instruments. And so Larry played the clarinet, so I wanted to play the clarinet, too, since he played the clarinet. But they ran out of clarinets. All they had was the accordion and violin left. So I said, oh, no. But my mother's brother, who happened to be a dancer in the Cotton Club, called the Cotton Club Boys, mm-hmm. He sort of played the trumpet as a hobby. But even before he gave me his trumpet, my mother and Sarah Vaughan took me down to hear Louis Armstrong when I was between 9 and 10 years old, because they knew him well. By virtue of them being in showbiz, they were all friends with the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gave me my first trumpet lesson on how to make a sound on a trumpet, on his trumpet and mouthpiece. But of course, I'm 9 or 10 years old. I had no idea who he was or the stature that he held in the world.
Right.
And then I studied privately after I took that first lesson, and my mother's brother gave me his trumpet. So I took private lessons at school and also an outside music studio in the Bronx. So a year later, I'm pretty good for a child. I could play Flight at the Bumblebee. So my mother took me back to see Louis Armstrong. I remember he asked me, am I still playing? I said, yeah, man. He grabbed his horn and played Flight at the Bumblebee back stage at the Apollo. And I remember he screamed and kind of fell off his chair. And as he was getting back up, he said, little Eddie, that's some of the baddest stuff I ever heard in my life. And told his wife, Lucille, to get that book of his, of 10 of his solos, transcribed, and he wrote on it, to little Eddie, this is to warm your chops up by, meaning lips. You sound wonderful. Keep playing. Love, Satchmo.
Wow.
I had no idea of the significance of that man at that time. You know, but looking back in retrospect, I say to myself, oh, my God, I didn't know it was going to turn into the rest of my life.
Wow. I understand another meeting that sort of helped you decide that this would become one of the things that you would do with your life is meeting Miles Davis.
Yes. When I was in San Francisco after my mother married Dr. Henderson, her second husband, and he was the doctor to people like Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Billie Holiday, Miles, Sarah Vaughan, John Coltrane, Cannonball Adderley, all those icons in the jazz world. And so I used to hear these people on the radio, but at that time I was going to the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, studying classical music. So I really never heard jazz except on the records. And then when I came home one day, I think from basketball practice, I was a junior in high school, Miles Davis was staying at our house that whole week. I heard of his name, but I really didn't know who he was. So he took me in his car to the gig, the Black Hawk in San Francisco, and in his band was John Coltrane, Cannonball Adderley, Wynton Kelly, Paul Chambers, and Philly Joe Jones.
Wow.
When the band started playing, the light went on bright in my head, and I thought to myself, Eddie, that's what you should be doing for the rest of your life.
Wow.
Just a mystique. It seemed like something cosmic was going down. I didn't know you could do that with an instrument, make those kind of sounds. I said, oh, my God.
Wow.
And so that really put me on the trail of trying to learn this ethnic tradition called jazz.
Tell me something. As a trumpeter and flugelhorn player, what is the difference?
Well, they're played essentially the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Three valves, you have a mouthpiece, you buzz, the sound comes out. The flugelhorn is a little bigger, and so it gets a more mellow, voluptuous sound. The trumpet is a little more treble than the flugelhorn. Usually play flugelhorn on ballads. The trumpet is really a little more aggressive.
Got it. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you also took lessons with Freddie Hubbard.
Oh, yeah. After I was accepted to medical school, because you know, I just wanted to play the trumpet. But my stepfather, he was a doctor, and he and I really didn't get along that tough.
Mm-hmm.
And so he told me when I was 14 that a doctor, the closest thing to God, and I wasn't smart enough to be a doctor like him. I was going to be a bum in the waterfront.
Mm.
So I said, oh, yeah, watch. So I went out of my way to study hard, get good grades, and applied to medical school. And luckily I was accepted. But I was really into music, but I had to complete my commitment to become a doctor despite him.
Right.
And while I was in medical school in Washington, D.C. at Howard University, I would drive up every weekend and hear people like Freddie Hubbard and Lee Morgan and Coltrane and Miles and all those people, those icons of jazz in the 60s. And I became more enthusiastic about being a jazz musician. Even Art Blakey, I think my third year of medical school, he asked me to join him. I said, well, if you like me now, you'll like me after I get my degree because I have to do this first. And then lo and behold, after I finished the degree, I had to specialize in something. I already got my MD and license and everything. So I could have gone into surgery, pediatrics, gynecology, or whatever. But that would be during a residency for 4 more years on call every other night.
Oh, no.
But when I saw psychiatry residency was on call once every 45 days, I said, Aha, that gives me more time to play the trumpet. And so I entered a psychiatric residency, and right at the end of that residency, Herbie Hancock came through town and needed a trumpeter for 1 week. People recommended me. I knew Herbie, but all we talked about was sports cars. So he said, well, no, you're a doctor. I said, well, just give me one shot. That 1 week turned into the rest of my life.
Wow.
Because by playing with Herbie Hancock, it mm-hmm. opened the door, so I didn't have to work my way up through the trenches like most musicians do,
right.
step by step. I was right at the top from Jump Street. So people, Joe Henderson, Dexter Gordon, Art Blakey, Max Roach, Jackie McLean, all those people would call me because, well, they assume, well, you play with Herbie, so, hey, come on, you want this gig or that gig? And so it really changed my life.
Nice. Now, I want to talk more about your time with M1Dishi and Herbie Hancock. But there's something that I read somewhere. And it said that after you had served in the Air Force between 1958 and 1961, Henderson became the first African-American to compete
for
figure skating championship.
Well, see, when I first moved to San Francisco at age 14, it was during the summer. I didn't know any kids my age. So my stepfather, the first week I was there, he bought me tickets for the Ice Follies. And when I saw that, with my personality, I mean, I was mesmerized. And so the star of the Ice Follies was quitting and opening up ice skating school. I was the first one to take lessons from him. I thought at that point, before I met Miles, I thought my calling in life was to be a figure skater. Because
right.
I went 365 days a year, but not the public sessions. You know, only with the competitors at 5 o'clock, 5:30 in the morning until 10 at night. And the summer straight through, and then during school I'd be from 5:30 to 8 in the morning, go to high school, and then back on the ice from say like 3:30 or 4 until 10 at night, just private competition sessions with the competitors. Usually people who compete have to compete through some club representing a figure skating club.
Right.
Anyway, I am in San Francisco. The San Francisco wouldn't even give me an application. They said, call me boy. No boy. So I had to compete as an individual member of the United States Figure Skating Association in order to enter competition. So that, again, made me mad.
Right.
So I went out of my way to all the double axles and triple salchows. I could do all that when I was in high school, you know. But then I ran into so much racial prejudice. And then I met Miles Davis and jazz kicked in. Then I was accepted to medical school. So something had to go.
Right. And the figure skating went.
Yeah, exactly.
But it says that you won a Pacific and Midwestern title.
Well, that's a little misnomer.
Okay.
The Pacific Coast Championship. It was almost like Jackie Robinson. And I heard one of the judges put me sixth. There was only five competitors.
Wow.
And somebody actually put a black cat on the ice.
Oh, my goodness.
This is way back in the 50s.
Right.
It was all like a lily white sport then.
Right.
Just like basketball used to be.
Sure.
Just like tennis used to be.
Right.
And so the San Francisco club wouldn't even let me join. But then when I was in the Air Force, I went to the rink. And when the people in Denver, Colorado, where I was stationed, the club saw me skating with open arms, they begged me to represent them. And that was the Midwestern Championships.
Wow.
I actually didn't win, but I won the free skating part. Because in those days, 60% of the competition was just doing the mundane school figures, you know, like making circle eights.
Figure eights, tracing it.
Yeah, and the artistic part, the free skating, that was only worth 40% of figure skating competitions. But they've changed that.
Okay.
So I won the free skating. So it's a misnomer that I won the championships.
Got
it. I won the free skating part.
Do you still follow?
Figure skating? Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, my first teacher, Richard Dwyer, who's the star of the Ice Follies at that time, I just talked to him a few days ago. You know, he comes to hear me play whenever I'm out in L.A.
And nice.
He's a fan of mine now. And as much as I used to revere skating, I try put on my skates about 5 or 6, 7 years ago.
Because,
like, I never was on the ice. I started gliding. I said, what is this? But after about 10 minutes, I got my legs under me, started spinning and doing just single jumps, you know.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. but I loved it.
I also read that you have a bachelor's in zoology.
I went to University of California in Berkeley. The only reason I got my major in zoology, because when you major in zoology, that discipline fulfills more easily all the prerequisites to go to medical school.
Ah, I see.
I didn't want to work in a zoo, so that was not my incentive for that. It was just to get into medical school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is trumpeter, flugelhorn player, Eddie Henderson. Eddie Henderson is presently with the Cookers, and unfortunately, I didn't get to slip in any of those selections this evening. But what you're listening to right now in the background is Buddy Terry, Quiet Afternoon, from his 1972 mainstream records release, Pure Dynamite. The soloists in order are Ayerto Morero on percussion, Buddy Terry, flute, soprano saxophone, tenor saxophone, Eddie Henderson on trumpet, flugelhorn on others, Joanne Brachin on electric piano, Lenny White on drums, and Stanley Clark is the bassist and composer. Before that, we heard Quasar from Herbie Hancock. This is an Mwandishi ensemble selection from the 1992 Warner Brothers release Crossings. Mwandishi, Herbie Hancock on electric piano, mellotron, percussion, Ngonga, Eddie Henderson on trumpet, flugelhorn, percussion, Muele, Benny Maupin on soprano saxophone, bass clarinet, piccolo flute, alto flute, percussion. He's also the composer. Pepo Ntoto, Julian Priester, tenor trombone, alto trombone, and bass trombone. He's also playing percussion. Dr. Patrick Gleason on Moog synthesizer. Miche Zaji, Buster Williams, on electric and acoustic bass. He's also playing percussion. And Jabali Billy Hart on drums and percussion. Before that, we heard Lily Bell. That's Frank Sinatra and the Charioteers, which features Eddie Henderson's father, Eddie Jackson. This is sound from YouTube. 1945 was when this was recorded. Before that, we heard Ain't Misbehavin', Fats Waller, featuring Eddie Henderson's mother, Vivian Brown, from 1941. Before that, we heard from Eddie Henderson's latest release, Be Cool, The Sandcastle Headhunter, 2018 Smoke Sessions release. Eddie Henderson on trumpet flugelhorn, Donald Harrison on alto saxophone, he's also the composer, Kenny Barron on piano, Essiet Essiet on bass, and Mark Clark on drums. Before that, as mentioned, we heard Midnight Train from Jerry Gonzalez and the Fort Apache Band. This is from the 1995 Milestone Records release, Pensativo. Jerry Gonzalez on trumpet, flugelhorn, congas, Eddie Gonzalez on bass, Larry Willis on piano, John Stubblefield on tenor saxophone, Joe Ford on alto saxophone and soprano saxophone, Steve Berrios on drums, marimba, and percussion. And of course, we opened our program with our theme from Nina Simone, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, from a compilation, The Very Best of Nina Simone. Sugar in My Bowl, 1967-1972. This was originally recorded in 1967. This is from a 1998 RCA BMG compilation. Next is our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer Hank Williams, and more from Eddie Henderson right here on Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for November 11th. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can see them live. And this week's guest is trumpeter Eddie Henderson. He has no immediate area shows, but will be back at the Winter Jazz Fest in January 2019, and we'll share full details of that when the schedule's final. We'd also like to thank those of you who contributed during WBAI's Fall Fun Drive. It's only because of you that we're able to stay on the air. And we start this week with poet and fellow WBAI host Felipe Luciano, who'll be at St. Peter's Church for a Jerry Gonzalez Memorial on November 12th. Guitarist Mark Rebo has a residency at The Stone from the 13th through the 17th. Pianist Barry Harris is at St. Peter's Church for a lunchtime set on the 14th. Trumpeter Adam O'Farrell is at the Jazz Gallery with Gabriel Zucker's ensemble on the 15th. Vocalists Catherine Russell and Kurt Elling are at Newark's NJ Pack on the 15th. Drummer Andrew Surreal and pianist Dave Burrell are at the 75 Club on the 15th. Drummer Bobby Sanabria is at the Apollo Theater for a live taping of NPR's Code Switch on the 16th. Tubist Joe Daly is at Terra Blues with Hazmat Modine on the 17th. Bassist Alex Blake is at Brooklyn's Sister's Place on the 17th. Pianist Mark Carey's Saturday Night Harlem Sessions series continues with late sets at Smoke on the 17th and 24th. Bassist William Parker, multi-instrumentalist Cooper Moore, and dancer Patricia Nicholson Parker are all at the Clemente Soto Velez Center on the 18th for a free afternoon set as part of Arts for Arts' Sunday Afternoon series. Bassist Linda Mahon Oh is at St. Peter's Church for a Jazz Vespers set on the 18th. Pianist Harold Mayburn is at Newark's NJ Pack with Eric Alexander's Quartet on the 18th and leads a trio at Smalls on the 21st. Looking further ahead, drummer Lenny White is at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Dizzy's Club with George Colligan's trio on the 20th. Bassist Christian McBride is at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem for a talk on the 20th. Trombonist and seashellist Steve Turay is at Smoke for a McCoy Tyner tribute from the 23rd through the 25th. Guitarist John Schofield leads a quartet at the Blue Note from the 27th through December 2nd. Finally, guitarist Mary Halverson is at the Jazz Gallery with Gabriel Zucker on the 28th. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news. And Sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on our website. And if you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too, where we'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. And if you really like what we do, please help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. The support WBAI link on the Sugar and My Bowl website has details, and we're grateful for any help you can give the station. This is Hank Williams signing off with our bi-weekly schedule. We're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on air on November 25th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
Check this out. This is Chuck, your public enemy number one, the rebel without a pause, bringing the noise and fighting the power right here to the Sights and Sounds. That's right, Sights, 99.5 WBAI.
In order to get the degree of zoology, you have to study chemistry, organic chemistry, all the life sciences, calculus, mathematics, and all that stuff to make sure your mind is receptive to all the rigorous memory stuff that you have to go through. So by going through that, medical school was easy. You know, people ask me many times, well, how do you do jazz and a doctor into figure skating?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my stock answer is that when one learns discipline at an early age, mm-hmm. you can do many different major things. But it's harder to learn discipline when you get older because there's so many life distractions.
Right.
And in fact, two or three friends of mine, they do four or five disciplines. One guy, because I'm going to SF Jazz to play with Kenny Barron, and the guy's house where I'm staying at, he is an MD. He has two PhDs.
Wow.
One in biochemistry, one in organic chemistry.
Wow.
He has his own biotech company, and also he's a trumpet player and has his own big band in San Francisco.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, but I think by studying music at an early age, 9 or 10, that teaches you arithmetic, symmetry, and form, and, of course, the concentration and focus of attention that the figure skating gave me starting at an early age. That helped my discipline. So going through college and medical, it was actually a piece of cake.
Wow.
Because, you know, I had good study habits. I arranged my time in order. Because when you're doing a double axle or triple salchow, you can't be thinking about a C scale or you'll land on your head.
Right.
So I learned to focus my attention on what I'm doing at that particular time.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So you really did show your stepfather. Was he ever able to witness any of your accomplishments?
Well, after I got it, my MD, then I started practicing. Before I started practicing medicine, when I joined Herbie Hancock, I already had my license to practice.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, well, I don't see why you're going to stop being a doctor just to play music. Well, quiet as his cat, he really wanted to be a musician, but didn't have the talent. So I told him, I said, first of all, you're not qualified to understand what I do because I can do what you do, but you can't do what I do.
That's right.
he just turned red as a beet and threw me out of his office.
Okay.
I just laughed. But at God bless him, you know, near the end, he would come to all my concerts, you know, and with tears in his eyes, right? The last time I saw him, he says, I love you, boy.
Oh.
I said, I love you too, man.
That's wonderful.
No, always forgive me.
Good. He certainly gave you the fuel, though.
Oh, yeah. Not the normal way.
Right.
Yeah. Reverse psychology.
Exactly.
Cool. Yeah.
So you're practicing as a psychiatrist.
No, see, that's another misnomer.
Well,
I practiced after Herbie Hancock ended in 1973, the M1 Dishi group. I moved back to San Francisco, and I walked in this doctor's office. I said, wait a minute to myself. You have a medical degree and a license. So I walked in this Dr. Jackson's office in San Francisco, prominent black doctor there. And so I said, well, Dr. Jackson, I have a license to practice. Do you need any help? But I said, but I have to tell you one thing. I'm really into music, so if I get a tour, I have to go. So he just chuckled and laughed and said, well, lad, let me beat a bongo and come with you. And he hired me, and sometimes I'd go for like 6 and 7 weeks on tours, and he would pay me full salary even when I wasn't there.
Oh, wow.
And it was unbelievable. And I only work 4 hours a day, but not psychiatry, just general medicine. You know, I see that writ many times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm practicing psychiatry.
Right.
Well, all publicity is good, so I just let it go. It's too much trouble to correct good publicity. So
okay.
Whatever. When I got my license, it was just general practice that I practiced.
Okay.
And they sent me all the psychiatric patients also, but I was never a practicing psychiatrist as such.
It was written somewhere that you had stopped practicing medicine in 87 completely.
In 87, yeah.
Right.
It was medicine, yeah, not psychiatry.
Okay.
And I haven't put on a stethoscope around my neck since 87.
All right.
People say, do you still practice? I say, yeah, every day. I've been wiggling my three fingers.
Right. So let me backtrack to your playing with Herbie Hancock and M1 Dishi. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to tell you straight up, I love that period. That is just...
Oh, me too.
Oh, my goodness. But
yeah.
I've heard you say that you basically play bebop.
Well, when I was trying to learn the craft, now I was trying to learn the basic building blocks of quote-unquote jazz before I joined Herbie.
Mm-hmm.
And then his music really was influenced by Miles Davis's album, Bitches Brew.
Right.
Which just we released just before M1 Dishi started. So when M1 Dishi Group first started, the first month we were playing things from Fat Fat Albert Rotunda album, mm-hmm. and Speak Like a Child, mm-hmm. that repertoire. And then one day, Herbie did a commercial for Eastern Airlines, just a 30-second commercial, and one of the tunes was a beautiful lyrical melody called You Know When You Get There.
Yes.
And so we started playing that on one of the gigs, uh-huh. and that evolved into the new concept of, like, just playing with open skies rather than a lot of changes one after another. and it changed the whole concept, and that band was really ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
Forged a new style for everybody. Even the group Weather Report used to come, the whole band, and sit and listen to us before they ever performed. And then when the Downbeat magazine came out, the best jazz group in the world, Weather Report, they had never even played a gig yet.
What?
yeah. So that was just politics.
Mm.
It was absurd.
Wow. Yeah. Somebody had told me, I can't remember who it was, but they told me a story that the band, M1Dishi, had visited his campus or something, and I think he was like your roadie or something while you were there. He got the school to invite you. And when you walked in, everybody with the afros and dashikis and capes,
I
mean, like, it looked like rock stars.
Yeah, what the? you know the drummer Victor Lewis?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we played at his school.
Okay.
In Iowa or something, in Des Moines or something. And I remember him. He was going to school at that time. And I didn't know him then, but I remember this guy sitting in front, like mesmerized. He never went back to another class.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And that people used to follow the band, men and women, just followed them like disciples.
Wow.
Like religious disciples, all followers all around the country. It was quite a band, you know.
Well, the music was incredible. I mean, it was amazing.
The beautiful thing about that band is we worked for 3.5 years
mm-hmm.
together, like 9 or 10 months a year. It was like a cosmic collage.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. I think it changed everybody's life in that band, even though Herbie had played with Miles Davis and such beforehand, mm-hmm. and all the other guys had been on the road. That was my first major gig of any stature, so you know it blew my mind.
Sure.
But it blew everybody's mind in that band.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you remember everybody else's Swahili name? I understand it was given by James Mtumi.
Well, Mtumi kind of spearheaded it because mm-hmm. everybody in the band coined the phrase of everybody else. Herbie Hancock was M1Dishi, which means composer. And Julian Priest was Papo Mtoto. That meant spirit child. Buster Williams was M. Chesaji. That meant player, like a player on an instrument.
Uh-huh.
Not player well with a Superfly hat.
Right.
And who else? Billy Hart was Jabali. Jabali. I forgot.
Okay. I'll have to look it up then.
Yeah. Who else? Oh, Benny Maupin was Mwile Iafemia, Body of Good Health. And I was Mganga Shaorti, Doctor of Good Advice.
All right.
Not device, advice.
Okay. Interesting.
You know, yeah. And so it was quite an experience, you know, that particular band. Oh, and then after that band was over, we were really playing like cosmic stuff. It wasn't like bebop. And then after that band ended, I realized that I had to go back and clean up my inadequacies or holes in my playing or musical knowledge. So I started my subsequent records. I went back and tried to clean up the missing gaps in my musical being. If you see the chronology of my records after M1Dishi.
Whether you were cleaning it up or not, I noticed that I guess the next two releases in particular were in a similar vein. They had a similar sound.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
They explored in that way.
So you talk about Realization and Inside Out?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Well, if you notice, it was really the Herbie Hancock Band.
Right.
Under my name.
On the first one, on Realization.
Yeah, exactly. And those two records, Realization was my very first one under my name, and Inside Out. That's really how Herbie Hancock Man sounded in person. Mm-hmm. Even though the M1Dishi records are beautiful, they were a little watered down by his big record company for commercial sales. But mine was unadulterated how the M1Dishi Band sounded in person.
All right.
Tell you the truth.
Oh, we left somebody out. Dr. Patrick Gleason.
Mm-hmm.
He was a doctor as well, M.D.?
He was a doctor of history.
Okay.
Okay. If I'm not mistaken, either history or English. I'm not sure which one.
Okay.
But he came on on the last year.
Right.
He was like a really valuable augmentation to the already established Mwadishi group.
Right.
And he just threw us out into the cosmos with all those beautiful sounds.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, very talented man.
So you actually have quite the discography as a leader. I think there are, what, 80 releases?
Something like that, yeah. I believe.
Yeah, that's a
yeah.
lot. And
yeah.
your most recent
yeah.
is Be Cool.
Oh, yeah, the most recent one, and I'm really proud of that. I think that this last record has gotten quite a bit of acclaim, and the title is written by my wife, Natsuko.
Yeah.
She's a very talented composer. I've recorded about 5 of her songs over the last few albums I've recorded. But this most recent one, Be Cool, I think really exemplifies where I'm at musically. It shows you where I came from, and I think where I am at the present, and what I'm hopefully trying to project toward the future. And it's doing quite well. Over the summer, it was like number 2 or 3 on the charts.
Yes.
And I just found out that the record company submitted me in 2 categories for a possible Grammy, which is being voted on for the album of the year, and in 1 of the tunes for the best solo. So I'm just keeping my fingers crossed.
By the way, I need to thank Mrs. Natsuko Henderson for helping us with this conversation, or arranging to make this happen.
She's invaluable. Invaluable to me on every level. She's great. And my daughter, Kava Menzies, she has a different name because my ex-wife remarried again, and he legally adopted Kava.
Okay.
But I'm the actual biological father. Huh? She wrote a beautiful, mysterious tune on this last Be Cool album entitled Night Ride.
For you before? Or had she approached you to write before?
No, I approached her because she's so musically talented. Because she graduated from Berklee School of Music, a 5-year program in 3 different disciplines. Piano performance, composition, arranging, and education. 5-year program she finished in 3 years, nothing less than A+ in every subject. Never achieved at Berklee School of Music.
Wow.
Isn't that something? And then she figured, she told her to herself, she didn't have enough education. So then she went to University of Miami and got a master's degree in film orchestration.
Oh, wow.
And by virtue of all those accolades, she's the head of the music department and chair of the vocal department at Oakland High School of the Performing Arts in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yay! Excellent.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent. Isn't that
of educational institutions. Are you still teaching at Oberlin and Juilliard?
I was teaching in Juilliard for about 9 years, and that ended about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Which overlapped. This is my 5th year at Oberlin,
okay.
And right outside of Cleveland, Ohio. But see, at Juilliard, there were like 5 trumpet students and 3 trumpet teachers. Mm. So by virtue of that, I would have 1 student a year.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't cost effective just for me to drive in and park.
Right.
And to Manhattan.
Right.
In Overland, the
easy.
Only trumpet teacher.
Oh, okay.
But like Billy Hart, myself, and Gary Bartz all do the same thing. We travel there, and they're so nice that they work around our tour schedules. So it makes it very convenient.
Nice.
One thing I might add, you know, speaking of those 3 things that I've done, the figure skating, the medicine, and the music, about a month ago I received this letter from DePaul University, not DePaul in Chicago, but DePaul, DePauw mm-hmm. University in Indiana. Mm-hmm. They wrote me a letter. They wanted to give me an honorary doctorate
degree. Oh, my.
In 3 different things.
What?
Medicine, music, and athletics, and in parentheses, figure skating.
Oh, my goodness.
And wanted to know, was I available to receive these accolades in May, this coming May?
Oh,
I said,
wow.
Well, I'll make myself available.
Right? Oh, my goodness.
And so it was really a big honor.
Oh, amazing. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And you know what's really interesting about that as well? I was thinking when I was going to talk to you that you're one of the few people who is an actual doctor and not just received an
right.
honorary doctorate.
Right, like Dr. Lonnie Smith.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, you've heard of Denny Zeitlin, the pianist. Well, he's a psychiatrist, and uh-huh. he was my advisor when I was doing my residency way back in 69 and 70.
Wow.
And when I decided to go out on the road with Herbie Hancock and quit the end of the residency, he came to me and said, you know, Eddie, that's what I really always wanted to do, but he was so entrenched in his private practice mm-hmm. teaching at the medical school, he just couldn't make that decision. And I had no private practice at that time, so I had no choice. I had to go.
Right. Oh, and by the way, musically speaking, you had a disco hit.
Oh, right.
What you're listening to right now in the background is the disco tune from Eddie Henderson, Prance On, from his release Mahal, a 1978 Capitol Records release. Eddie Henderson on trumpet, flugelhorn. Herbie Hancock is on Fender Rhodes, clavinet, and synthesizers. M. Toomey, who is the composer of this selection, is on piano. Benny Maupin on bass clarinet, alto flute. Julian Priester on all trombones. Hubert Law on flute. Ray Obiedo on guitar, Paul Jackson on electric and acoustic basses, Howard King on drums, and Bill Summers on congas and percussion. Before that, we heard 2 more selections from the Be Cool release, Eddie Henderson's most recent Smoke Sessions release. Eddie Henderson on trumpet, flugelhorn, Donald Harrison on alto saxophone, Kenny Barron on piano, Essiet bass, and Mark Clark on drums. We heard Night Rider, written by Eddie Henderson's daughter, Kava Menzies. And before that, we heard the title selection, Be Cool, written by Mrs. Natsuko Henderson. Before that, we heard another selection from Herbie Hancock, the M1 Dishi Ensemble. You'll Know When You Get There. This is from the 1971 Warner Brothers release, M1 Dishi. M1 Dishi, Herbie Hancock on Fender Rhodes, piano, percussion. He's also the composer. Ganga, Eddie Henderson on trumpet, flugelhorn, percussion. Muele, Benny Maupin on bass clarinet, alto flute, Pippo Utoto. Julian Priester is on tenor trombone, alto and bass trombones. Mitch Ezaji, Buster Williams on bass, Jabali Billy Hart on drums, and Ndugu Leon Chancellor on drums and percussion. And of course, before that, we heard our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer, Hank Williams.
That was really a funny fluke act.
Tell us about it.
What happened? It was released in England.
Uh-huh.
I forget the title.
France on.
And the disc jockeys in England, it was during the disco era. And they made a mistake and played it. It was released on the 33 vinyl. They made a mistake and played it at 45 speed. So even to this day, this was like mid-70s. To this day, when I go to England, invariably somebody, a couple of people in the crowd says, "By Joe, man, can you play Franzon, sir?" You know? And it's like a cult in England.
Wow,
just
yes.
By a fluke accident. So that put me on the map in Europe.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, I've had an amazing life, to say the least.
And I guess now your steady musical gig, in addition to your working with your own bands, the Cookers.
The Cookers,
the
right.
The Cookers.
We've been together like almost 11 years now and still going.
It's like
it's
a
wonderful
band.
Group.
It's a super group.
Oh, it is. It's all journeymen. All of us have been out there about the same amount of time. And it's really wonderful, the camaraderie. And we all come from the same place through the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. Wow, damn, I'm that old. I just realized that. Whoops.
Through the decades.
Yeah, through the decades. I'll put it like that. Through the decades. Thank you.
What was your call like when there was a decision to put together the Cookers?
Well, the original Cookers was an album. When I was in medical school, I would come up to New York, and there was a record on Blue Note Records with Freddie Hubbard and
right.
Lee Morgan
right.
called The Night of the Cookers.
Right.
And ironically, I drove Freddie. It was two nights. I drove Freddie to the gig and back to his apartment in Brooklyn after the gig both nights.
Oh, wow.
And I was still in medical school. I was like in awe of those people. And all that screaming on the record, I could hear my voice because I was in the front row. Because they blew my mind.
Uh-huh.
And then I think that the Cookers, the present day group, was more or less a derivative of that performance, like a continuation
right.
of the Night of the Cookers. And so we just coined that phrase. We're all from the same generation.
Except for David Weiss.
Except for David Weiss. Well, David was more or less the one who did most of the arranging
right.
for the different people, bring tunes, and David, he's a great arranger. And his footwork and his hookup to different promoters and booking agents allowed us to work all this time.
Right.
So it's really a hell of a group.
Yeah,
everybody loves it.
He worked with Freddie Hubbard as well.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because he did the arranging and some of the business and helped Freddie out near the end.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's actually how I met him. I had interviewed Freddie Hubbard and David helped me set that up.
Yeah, I love being in that group. The camaraderie, personally, and music between all the members of the group is just something special.
Yeah. My goal is to interview everybody in that group. I've talked to Billy Harper.
Billy Harper
was the first one that I spoke to. Then I spoke to Cecil McBee. So you're the third.
Yes, yes.
And eventually.
And George Cables is back because, you know, he had a little medical problem.
Oh.
Had an amputation of his leg, so he was out for about 6 or 7 months.
Oh, wow.
But he's back in the band now.
Was there someone there in his absence?
Sometimes we use Billy Childs.
Oh,
sometimes we use
okay.
Oren Evans from
okay.
Philly. And Sometimes Craig Handy was in there, but now, since Craig's not in anymore, Donald Harrison, alto player, he's in it. It's a wonderful band.
And Donald Harrison is on your latest release, Be Cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's one of my favorites.
You worked with Norman Connors, the drummer and producer.
Oh, right, right. This is way back during the time when I was with the M1DC group. And
right.
I mean, Norman's first couple of records, he used me, Gary Bartz, Herbie Hancock, Buster. Yeah, I think I've done about four of Norman's first four albums I was on. This is way back in the early and mid-70s.
But I also understand that when M1DC ended, you weren't really happy. You were kind of upset.
I don't think anybody was happy with that because I was just so naive and innocent. I thought that was going to last forever. But I was really angry, with her. Because actually he told us that he was just going to take off and go back to school and study orchestration. I said, Jesus Christ, let's rob a bank. Because I know he was in debt, I think $30,000 to his manager, David Rubinson, at that time.
Oh.
And so David wanted Herbie to be more commercial, but the guys in the band said, what the hell with you? So he told Herbie, well, look, you owe me this money, so he get rid of these guys or give me my money.
Oh.
So Herbie got caught in a bind.
Got it.
But the only thing that I think we didn't like, he told us he was just going to take off for a year. However, the last month before we broke up, he was already rehearsing the Headhunters, and they started working about 3 weeks later. So that left a funny taste in our mouths.
Got it.
But then after time and events passed, I understood. How can you not love Herbie? Okay, he's a true genius.
Right.
Yeah, and I love him personally also. I mean, after all, he opened the door for my musical life.
Right.
So how could I not be indebted and love him?
I actually wanted to address this. I noticed during the time when you were playing with M1DC and just being around the music, you managed to keep yourself away from drugs.
Who told you that?
Okay.
No, that's a misnomer, right?
Okay.
There. You want elaboration on that? I think during that specific period, that was the height of the cocaine boom, to
right.
tell you the truth. And I think everybody in that generation was kind of dabbling in cocaine at that particular period, or like around the hippies, the LSDs, and the cocaine, but never any heavy drugs. Nothing like heroin or anything like that, no.
Because there are musicians now who are younger and who should know better, who are...
Yeah, I know.
Transition.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, the M1DC group really never got into heavy drugs like IV shooting or heroin. A few times, the band took LSD collectively, maybe two or three times at once, and it was playing that music on that hallucinogen. Woo!
Right. Right.
Okay. Get a contact thinking about it.
Okay. Wow, I know there's so much I want to talk to you about, but I think we covered a lot of ground here.
Our whole life.
about
a half hour.
Yeah, right? How is that? That's pretty cool.
Very good. You're quick.
You already have the starter stories, so.
Right.
Are you scheduled to do anything in the New York area?
I'm supposed to play Smoke. At the end of December, a Coltrane tribute.
Oh, yes.
I think that's the last weekend of December, after Christmas. And it's myself, Eric Alexander.
Harold Mayburn.
George Cables.
Oh, Cables.
Not Harold, George Cables. What's his name? The bass player. I always forget. John Weber. And Joe Farnsworth.
On drums. So at Smoke, I'm looking at the website. It's and it has such a loosey-goosey kind of description here. It doesn't even indicate that you're here. It just says that...
Coltrane tribute?
Yeah, it just has John Coltrane tribute, but it doesn't,
Oh, yeah.
That's not helpful.
No.
Oh, by the way, you were involved in the New Blue Jazz Festival. I think it was last year.
Oh, yeah. New Blue. Ilhan, the owner of New Blue, he and I have known each other way back, over 25 years.
Wow.
Because he used to be a bus boy at Sweet Basil.
Oh, wow.
And he would play every Sunday at brunch. And I was friends with him, and I'd sit in with him. And then he has five New Blues, three in New York, one in San Paulo, and one in Istanbul. Bull.
Wow.
I'm so happy for him.
Excellent.
In a group called Silver. Oh. It's myself, Junie Booth, Ilhan, and Kenny Wallison, the quartet.
Oh, my goodness. That
I've been in that group for years.
How did that come about, the Silver group?
Well, just by affiliation with Ilhan and knowing him over the years, and he asks whenever I'm available, then he puts this particular combination and chemistry of musicians together, and it seems to work.
Oh, nice. That's going to be so great.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm looking
my
forward
goodness.
To that. Here, I just found it. January the 9th. Ilhan, the Winterfest.
Winter Jazz.
January 9th.
You're doing Winter Jazz Fest.
It's at New Blue, but it's Winter
yeah.
Jazz Fest.
Yeah. Okay. I think Billy Hart's going to be there as well. He's doing something.
Yeah, I know he does some things there, too, with his group.
So you're going to be at the Winter Jazz Festival.
January the 9th.
Wonderful. We look forward to seeing you there.
Me too. Oh, and one other thing I forgot. I believe December the 8th,
uh-huh.
I'm at the Zinc Bar with my quartet. More or less the same people, except Donald Harrison, that's on the Be Cool album.
Okay.
At the Zinc Bar. Yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, March the 8th. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's next year. Okay.
Yeah, next year.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
It was something to look forward to.
Close. Thank you, Jim.
Well, thank
really
you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Eddie Henderson. I really appreciate the time that you spent with us. This has been such a pleasure, and we look forward to
Me
seeing
too.
You.
Okay, thank Bye-bye. You. Bye-bye.
And you're listening to the closing moments of Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening was Eddie Henderson. And as mentioned, Eddie Henderson will be at Smoke at the end of December as part of the John Coltrane tribute there. You can check the Smoke website. And, of course, we'll keep you posted here on Sugar in My Bowl, sugarinmybowl.org. Our associate producer, Hank Williams, will be on the case. What you're listening to right now in the background is Chasing the Bird from the Roy Hargrove, Christian McBride, Stephen Scott Trio in tribute to Roy Hargrove, who sadly transitioned last weekend. This is from Parker's Mood, a 1995 Verve Records release. This is a duet between Roy Hargrove on trumpet and Christian McBride on bass. Stay tuned. La Nueva Alternativa is scheduled next. Sugar in My Bowl is scheduled to return on November 25th. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.